Hello, this is Bixby. Welcome to the Bixby Developers Chat Podcast. Here is your host, Roger Kibbe.
Hello, Bixby Developer Chat listeners. Today, I have the honor of talking with Gina Isham. Gina is a sonic brander and composer. She is the founder of Dreamer Productions and is involved in audio and sonic branding her entire career. Gina, please introduce yourself.
Hi, thanks for talking with me, Roger. Yeah, I am a sonic brander, like you said, and I create, consult, and educate on the power of sound in marketing. And that's how you and I met.
Great. Well, tell me a little bit more about you. You are a busy woman doing many, many different things. Tell me a little bit more about what you do.
Sure. I work with companies generally for an extended amount of time and try to talk to them about what their sound might be, because every company and every industry and every single brand and product is going to be different. It's not a templatized thing saying these are the elements that you need in your sonic branding, because sometimes you need to be silent. Sometimes you need to speak. Sometimes it needs to be musical. Sometimes it needs to be rhythmic or vibrational. You work with Samsung and you understand haptic vibrations and such. Sometimes it's that. And so I think that one of the main things that I evangelize on is that sonic branding is sonic. And the word sonic is not music necessarily, but it's vibrations and movement and rhythm. A sound wave is just that. It's a sound. And so I feel like when we think of it in that respect, a whole new opportunity of choice comes up, rather than thinking of, okay, I need like that catchy song with the snaps and the whistles and all that stuff. But you can think more organically. So for example, I always like to use the example of REI, which is an outdoor brand. And to give the idea of what a brand sounds like, I like to use the idea of REI. And when you think of REI, it's outdoor. So maybe some of the sounds you might think of is campfires, crackling campfires, or snapping of twigs, heavy boot movements across a hiking trail, maybe some birds chirping in the background, or a little trickle of water from a tiny little waterfall. So that's the kind of elements that I like to inspire people to think about, rather than necessarily thinking of an NBC chime or an Intel bong sound or the Netflix ta-dum. It can be even more simple than that.
Got it. Because I think we all think of the brand chimes, and those are really recognizable. The Netflix sound is so recognizable.
Yes,
and exactly. It's a great sound. But what you're saying is in their marketing, there could be some kind of subtle cue. So like an REI, they could be playing some sounds of a campfire or something that would really resonate with their audience then.
Got it. And it doesn't mean that you wouldn't come up with a mnemonic, which the NBC chimes would be a mnemonic, which is a short phrase, a melodic phrase. And I'm not saying you wouldn't have that, but I feel thinking of the organic nature of sound could help you to step into that mindset, because it really is, it is an esoteric thought. And I feel once I start talking to people about what sonic branding is and how their brand can have a sound, they get it, but they have to step into that place. And so providing context and perspective is huge.
So do you usually work with a brand's marketing team then? Is that the typical team that you work with?
It depends. It depends on the size of the company, because sometimes it's smaller. And that's the cool thing about sonic branding and also thinking of the organic nature of it. You can do this whether you're a big or a small company. So I could work with a company of one or two people and they could still implement this idea and have a fairly low financial investment, at least initially. Because like I said, we're not all MasterCard. We're not all going to have a huge sonic branding thing where it's every single audio touch point that you can find. Maybe all you need is a logo for your podcast. Or maybe all you need is a good spokesperson for your smart speaker ads. It's all about perspective and figuring out, don't just be reactionary, be strategic.
Which is so true with anything. Do you think most companies are attuned to this now? Or is it something that's kind of emerging of thinking about, I guess what way you're describing it is, you need to be really strategic around not only a chime, but what are the sounds that are used that people associate with your brand? I love the REI example. right? The sounds of camping sounds made me think of camping. And if I'm then if I go watch an ad or see something about REI, it completes the loop in my head. Is this something emerging, or do you think this is something brands have been doing for a long time? Are they paying more attention to it? I guess what's the state of sonic branding right now?
I think it's emerging. I think that it's a buzz right now, and I see it in the bigger companies and not the smaller companies. And that's why I say it's emerging, because when people catch on to this and really get it, they're going to realize that you don't have to be a multi-million dollar corporation. You can do this on your own. And that's the really exciting thing about what I evangelize and what I consult and create and everything, is that there's so much freedom to it. Yeah. For many years for advertising before the age of internet, you had to, if you really wanted to compete with the big dogs, you had to buy a broadcast TV ad spot. And I don't even know how expensive those are, but I guarantee you, I couldn't afford it. Smaller companies, even medium-sized companies, couldn't afford something like that. So that was the edge that TV advertising had, is it played to an audience that had a big marketing budget, that they could just put this money into it and broadcast themselves. And then in walked the internet, or became, the internet became, and all of a sudden the bar of entry went down. And I think that there was a lot of muck that we had to go through and all that stuff. But I feel like having that freedom where you and I could just start doing our own marketing, and we've got social media, and we could do paid advertising off of Twitter and Facebook, which is relatively cheap. And then we have all of this new voice first technology that we can play with. It's such an opportunity for smaller and medium-sized companies to compete with bigger companies. And I would even argue they could get ahead faster, because the bigger companies may have like staunch investors that they have to answer to, or they are stuck in their ways. There's a lot of big business that's stuck in their ways. They may still be advertising to TV and those larger budget audiences, and those are still valid, but with the smaller companies and with the internet and the way that we can just imagine now with so much at our fingertips, there is such a huge opportunity.
Yeah. And it strikes me, it's also cheap and easy to experiment.
Exactly.
Right? One of the things on the internet is go try, right? Lots of A/B tests. Try a couple things. This works. This is resonating. This isn't. Kill what doesn't work and go promote what does work. And you can never do that with TV, or not that I'm aware of, right?
Right. Well, you do a bad ad. Yeah, you do a bad ad and then you're going to read about it for months and months.
Exactly. Although sometimes with bad ads, actually.
I don't know how to figure that one out, but you're right. If they're bad enough,
when it goes viral,
it could be good.
Exactly. I'm thinking of the Dollar Shave ad. Well, I think that was intentional, the Dollar Shave Club.
Oh, yeah.
And things like that. But I think that was intentional, kind of viral marketing. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it strikes me as you're talking that way back when radio was dominant, that probably brands were thinking more about their audio presence, because that was how you marketed. It was your audio presence. And then TV came along, and video, and that, and then the internet came along. But now we're in an era where it feels like audio content, whether it's through voice and smart speakers and voice enabling things and podcasts or social media apps like Clubhouse, Twitter Spaces, all of a sudden, audio has gotten, I'll say, sexy again, or more attention again. One, do you agree? And do you think this is having brands rekindle an interest or a desire to really have a strong audio brand?
I think now is so timely because of COVID. And then when we go into post-COVID, you and I are on Zoom right now. And there is a real thing about Zoom fatigue. Sure. Video conferences, you're sitting at your desk all day, you're being inundated with all of these like pop-up notifications. It's just a lot. And sometimes we just need to untether. And I think that with voice, like you mentioned Clubhouse, it's a way to stay connected, but you don't have to invest your cheesy smile or whatever. You can just be doing your own thing and still be absorbing what's going on and participate in what's going on. And I think that podcasts also give you the opportunity to get the information that you want, but you don't have to be, you can be doing other things. You're untethered. You don't have to be looking at a screen. And then also with COVID, there's a lot more, especially in healthcare, where people are trying to figure out how to become a more touchless society. And I say touch less because I don't think we're going to be completely touchless, but just thinking of things that would keep us more healthy and safe, just like ATMs, having more voice activated functionality, or even using, I've heard about like the haptic vibrations through ultrasound, where it's you're experiencing the experience of touch, but you're not actually touching the buttons. This is something that I have been hearing about. So for ATMs, elevators, having voice activation rather than having to push the button, things like that. I think that voice has this really cool opportunity. And I think it was already on its way up before we all stayed home. But I think that it has an opportunity to really excel fast because of this. And I always go back to one of my favorite books that I've read is Malcolm Gladwell's The Outliers.
Oh, it's a great book. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think of voice in this way, where if it hadn't emerged where it is right now and through the circumstances that we are in right now, it wouldn't be where it is if certain circumstances hadn't happened at this time. Like, it's just everything kind of coalescing together. So I highly recommend that book for people who haven't read it.
Yeah, it is a great book. And I second that recommendation. Yeah, it's interesting. You're absolutely right with COVID. So you start being really cognizant of everything you touch and going, well, how can I interact with this differently? And it's such a monumental opportunity of the voice. Because one of the arguments I like to make is, if voice is really going to take off, it's got to be a first-class modality. In other words, we get used to, I can talk to my technology, or I can talk to the elevator, or I can talk to that. And right now, I feel like it's emerging, but there's still a bunch of devices we interact with that we don't talk with.
Yeah.
But as you start talking with all your devices, then you get in this mode where you're going to expect it. And I think you're right. I think COVID has kind of accelerated that as well. And I had to laugh, Zoom fatigue, as we're on Zoom. But I do like face-to-face when I do podcasts. I think it helps and things. But I think you're absolutely right about one of the things that I absolutely love about Clubhouse is I can sit and listen to it as a kind of a podcast kind of background. But I can jump in and do it. So I can listen to it driving my car, or I can be at home. And so you get this kind of, I can jump in and out, but I don't have to be on all the time. We all know on Zoom, on video, we feel we have to be on all the time. And so it's a mental kind of relief, actually, and something that's kind of interesting, because I think it's background things that you can listen to, but there's an element of interactivity. So I don't know what's going to happen, Clubhouse, Twitter Spaces, this whole area, but it feels like there's something there where it can go from background to foreground to background in a seamless way. And I don't know of another, I'll say, form of interaction or media that has allowed that in the past. So it's an interesting paradigm to me. It'll be interesting to see where it goes.
Yeah, I agree. I don't think that there has been something like this before. And I unfortunately am not on Clubhouse because, and this is my first experience of FOMO, but I'm on Android and my iPad is too old, so I can't get onto Clubhouse. So...
So I hear it's coming on Android very soon.
I hear that too.
They hired some Android developers. It'll be coming on there quite soon. And I think you'll enjoy it and things like that. We're a divided household. I work for the world's biggest Android manufacturer. Right. So I have Samsung phones and my kids have iPhones. And so it's a divided household, half and half. So I've always had both. Hey, Gina, I really wanted to, do you have an example of, you talked about REI, some sonic branding, but I'd love, do you have some other examples, or maybe it is REI, of a company that really does some good sonic branding?
Yeah, there's a lot. I try and change up my examples, but I was talking to somebody recently about this. And I think, because I go back and forth about if this brand actually does sonic branding or if they're really good at sonic branding elements. And so jury's out on me on what it is, but Coca-Cola is so good with that pop fizz sound. So like they change up their sonic logo and they change up things, but they're very good at gradually changing it. And it's still an essence of them. But the pop fizz really gets me because any carbonated beverage could use this pop fizz, but it's arguably, well, when I think when I hear the pop fizz, that's what I think of is Coca-Cola. And the reason being, in my experience, is that they committed to it. I grew up with that sound. And even though the logo has changed and all that stuff, they stayed with it. And it's truly remarkable to me. I feel that they really have a handle on the idea of sensorial marketing. And that's something else that I will probably talk about. But I think that's key, that you're not looking at it as just the visual representation. Because as you and I know, in voice tech world and everything, how do you do your visual when all you have is an Echo Dot? How are you going to put yourself out there if you have no sound specific to yourself? How are you going to get people's attention, especially if they've never seen you? Say you're an emerging company and you're starting it off on smart speaker. How are you going to stand out? And again, back to Coca-Cola, the huge giant, they really, I think all they'd need to do is have that in there and then say whatever they want and they've hooked you. You know who they are.
It doesn't surprise me that you say pick up somebody like Coca-Cola because they're such marketing geniuses. Yeah. I mean, I actually like Coke, but come on, it's sugar water, right? They've marketed sugar water extraordinarily well. And you're right, that kind of fizz. I can think of a Coca-Cola ad and they're so good and they're so recognizable and memorable. Mm-hmm. And I probably remember the visuals more, but I'll bet you without the audio, a lot of it would go away. Like I wouldn't, there is that pop fizz sound there that is so, Coca-Cola, right? Great, great, great example. What about the opposite? Do you have a company or can you share something where you're like, man, these people have an opportunity to do sonic branding and they don't seem to be taking advantage of it?
Yeah, but here's the thing. I've heard word that they're working on it. So I'm not sure.
So somebody's working on it and going to improve it. So go ahead.
Yeah. And it's another big company and it's surprising to me. Target. Mm-hmm. I think Target is such so I'm a mom of young kids. I've got an almost 4-year-old and an almost 6-year-old. Target was an escape. I could stick them in the cart and just, I didn't even buy stuff half the time, but they couldn't move. And I was doing a thing and they were entertained because they were out of the house and they have everything there. You can find everything there. I'm really surprised that they haven't caught on. And I think the first thing that I thought of was the POS sound when you're putting your chip reader in and people are exploring POS, and that's point of sale if people don't know what that is. But the point of sale sound always bothered me, especially when I got into the whole sonic branding element of it, because here you are, you've probably had a good experience, say in Target. I was free of having to figure out something to do for my kids. I was wandering around. Maybe I found a cute thing for $3 or something like that. Mm-hmm. And then I go and I purchase, and the very last experience that I have is like, how unsatisfying is that? Mm-hmm. And over the years I've been hearing more and more going on, and I think they might have something now. Most places do, but what an opportunity just for that POS sound to have a unique sound. So I've heard 2 or 3 different sounds that they like, it's a stock sound or something, but it goes off of the idea of ringtones. Everybody wanted to have their customized ringtone, but you know, you'd have your stock sounds, which weren't as interesting, and people would tend to go towards something else, or they put on vibrate or something like that. But just think of if Target had a specific sound element that just, it was pleasurable experience. It said, thank you, basically said, thank you for coming and come back in one way or another. And it was said in a way that was Target.
Now, that is such a great example, because I'm thinking of those point of sale and those payment terminals. And so many of you get the, which is probably like the Verifone, like default sound. And it's like negative.
It is.
You're doing something wrong. You got to pull your card out, right?
Yeah.
It's like, wait a second. I'm doing something wrong. I just completed a purchase. You should be thanking me. Wow, that is a great example of a subtle little thing that could make a big difference.
And that's something else that I talk about is like my little catchphrase that I've been using is, we all make sound. Let's make sound on purpose, because sound could be an enhancement and a benefit, and it could increase your ROI and your brand equity, or it could be a disillusionment and it could be pushing people away from you like nails on a chalkboard. So if you're not listening to what you're already sounding, you might be in trouble. You might be doing something accidentally, but you might be doing something accidentally wrong. I talk a lot about this. I have a course called over at soundandmarketing.com called Sounds, Power, and Influence in Marketing. And the whole premise of it is sound was there from the beginning. Regardless of what you believe the beginning of time was, sound was there because sound is vibration, and vibration comes from movement. And if we've been moving, we're making sound. So why aren't we paying attention to this? This is so innately us, and we're ignoring opportunity, and we're ignoring a possibility of screwing something up.
It's interesting, and I think you're right. You bring up the example of Target, but I happen to know that they're working heavily around voice assistant usage and really doing some interesting things. So I'll bet you they're going to fix this because they
That's
are
what I was
cognizant.
Saying. I have yeah. heard stuff. So
I happen to. I will say that I know that they're doing a bunch of work there and spending mm-hmm. a bunch of energy figuring out what they're going to do there. So
That's
I wouldn't
good.
Be
glad.
Surprised. So maybe their point of sale will have a little Target Bing or something. The equivalent of the red circle.
Yeah, why aren't they
so
playing
iconic.
Into that? Yeah, they should be playing into it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. What's the audio equivalent of your red circle or a sound effect that's welcoming? Mm-hmm. One of the reasons I really wanted to bring you on, Gina, is deeply involved in the world of voice assistants, and there's a lot of third-party developers building experiences. And yet I see a lot of them, and it jumps, and you start your skill, your action, your capsule, and then you get Alexa's voice or Bixby's voice
yes.
or Google's voice.
Yes.
It feels so humdrum. It feels, oh gosh, another thing there. And it feels like they're in the voice world, with a few exceptions, there's really a lack of kind of sonic, although you're in that medium, right? Mm-hmm. You're mm-hmm. in the medium, it's voice, it's sonic, it's branding. There's the lack of awareness of sonic branding. And it struck me, I was like, my gosh, right? The industry to move forward, people should be so much more aware of,
yeah.
of sonic branding and doing things. What are your thoughts around that?
Yeah, I agree with you. I see a lot of UX design and application and implementation where only part of the facet of sound is being focused on. And that's why I like share the articles that I do on LinkedIn. That's why I write what my thought piece is on what I'm thinking and how can sound or how can something visual sound like something. Just all of these thoughts to bring people out of their bubble, because it's important to have functionality to say an app and all of that stuff. But are you doing too many sounds through the functionality? Or is the sound not portraying the same action that the functionality is? There's a lot of different things that are going on. And I agree with you on the Alexa or Google or whatever that voiceover voice assistance is. I find it funny because using the example of Alexa, you hear Alexa before your brand. So Amazon is advertising itself before you're advertising yourself. So they're still getting this market share or whatever. Yeah. And I find it baffling. And there's a danger in that also for Amazon, because it could get to the point where we're sick of Alexa. There was a study done by Sentient Decision Science a little while ago, partnered with Man-Made Music, or they're made music now, but they did a study on the dumb sound for Netflix. And they actually decreased their brand equity over COVID because their ta-dum sound played too much and people got sick of it.
Interesting.
And so we like the ta-dum sound, but if you're binging something, you're going to get sick of it. Like I think of when I was pregnant with my first, with my daughter, and I was vertical the whole time. I couldn't get, or vertical, horizontal. I was laying down. I was laying down the whole time. I couldn't get up. And I binge watched The Office. And you have no idea how frustrating it is when every 3 or 4 episodes, that thing pops up and says, "Are you still watching? Keep watching or stop." I'm like, "Yes, I'm still watching. I can't move."
Right,
so like visually,
don't you know that? Yes, exactly.
I know what I'm doing right now. I can't get up. And so visually, that was really frustrating for me. And I got really upset. So imagine if you've got this Alexa voice all the time for whatever you're ordering, whatever you're searching for, whatever music you want, whatever grocery list you're adding. Are you going to get sick of her?
Right. Obviously, voice actors are the very best of the best, right? Mm-hmm. You cannot come close to a voice actor with a synthetic voice. So a brand that can afford a voice actor, go for it, because the emotive kind of qualities of a real human are just way above and beyond anything synthetic. Mm-hmm. But I'm excited about the kind of, you can create your own synthetic voices, or you can create, there's a lot of companies coming out there that can do it. So a brand could create their own, not only their own voice, but also, to your point, their own sound effects. I just heard a talk from John Gillian and Katie, and I'm going to forget her last name, but they won an Alexa contest for this thing. It's like a day at the museum. Mm-hmm. One of the things they talked about was spending an enormous amount of time finding museum sound effects, like the sound effects of being in a museum and trying to interject them at the right time. So it felt like you were actually in a museum there. Mm-hmm. And I thought that was really powerful, a powerful example of somebody spending a bunch of time on something that you might not even notice when you're using that voice skill, not consciously, but subconsciously, if it's putting you where it is. That was a good example of some sonic branding.
No, I agree. Good sound is sound you don't recognize. Mm-hmm. You recognize bad sound and you're going to run from it. What is it that they always say that 50% of a movie is sound? And so it can't be, I would argue, you can't have a good movie if the whole time the sound is messed up because you're going to be focused on it. You're going to miss the movie. If you're having an experience, say in a museum, if you've got something really obnoxious, a squeaky fan, which I have behind me, but a squeaky fan going off, that's going to take away from your experience. You're going to miss something that you were paying attention to, and you might not come back if it's annoying enough. So yes, I agree. Good sonic branding is sound you don't hear. It just fits in.
So talking about people building voice applications, what's some advice you would give for people who are, let's say, not a big company, they have big budgets, they can do whatever they want, but a small startup or an individual's building a voice skill and they'd really like to make it amazing, what would you tell them as a sonic brander to think about?
Well, I can't talk to the development part because I am an appreciator of those that can do that, but I do not understand it. But what I would say is just to step back and be like, what is your intention? What is the point of this app that you're creating with your company? So what is your company's intention by using voice assistants? Like, it shouldn't be just a reactionary thing because everybody's got an app. That's not going to help you at all. And it's going to be harder because you're thinking it up as you go. But how can voice facilitate your company? I think that would be the best way to start because you don't want to just be inundated with sound. Sometimes there's no sound necessary. So
silence is golden.
Silence is golden. I think it's Japan. Mm-hmm. I think this is right, but there's Japanese art, and I'm not an art connoisseur, but this always got me. But there's certain kinds of art, I think in Japan, where there's space in it called ma, and I guess mm-hmm. that's like white space. So mm-hmm. ma is you create the white space in the art. So it's not supposed to be completely covered in color. It's not supposed to be really heavy on things going on. There should be the space of silence. And I think the same thing with sound marketing and sonic branding. There should be space for quiet.
That's interesting because great public speakers know when to pause, mm-hmm. when to leave a couple seconds. It gets the listener's kind of brain going. If you listen to a okay versus a great, often it's because the greats pause at just the right time for a second or two. And it's to just directly to your point. So I wanted to explore a little bit. You talked about sensorial marketing. Am I pronouncing that right? Tell me a little bit more about what you mean by that.
So we have five senses: sight, sound, smell, touch, and taste. And in marketing, we generally only focus on the visual. And I don't have the stat in front of me, but it was something like 85% of marketers focus on visual marketing, even though it's been proven that sound can affect you globally, it can increase ROI, it has like a massive potential for memory recognition like that. All these things that are in place that have been proven that sound can do, and we're still 85% visual. And to step even aside from that, it's more than sight and sound. It's smell, it's touch, and it's taste. I just interviewed I interviewed the team at Pandora Studio Resonate, and they worked at the end of 2020, they worked on a project with Dove where they actually used 4 out of the 5 senses. And I was really excited to talk to them because you don't hear that sort of thing very often. So they had this bubble bath and bath wash that was like a mango sound escape was basically what they wanted to do. They wanted to create a sound escape. And so what they did was they created a playlist for your bubble bath for when you're taking a bath.
Cool.
And it was like, even the experience was the length of what a bubble bath would be. You're not missing anything. They're not dragging it on too long or whatever. So the thing that was really cool about that, it seems kind of simplistic, but at the same time, you've got sight, you've got smell, because they always smell. You've got touch, because you're in the bath. Mm-hmm. And sight, smell, touch, and the taste if you accidentally eat, you know, ingest yes, some of it. But
I don't suggest drinking bath water, but you know, occasionally it happens.
I don't suggest it. But if it were to happen, then they've incorporated all five senses.
There you go.
But we are sensorial creatures, is the point that I'm trying to make.
Got it.
And we never experience just one thing. Like when we're experiencing the visual, I'm still, even if I wasn't seeing you right now while we were recording, I would still be seeing the microphone in front of me. Smell, I would still smell like what's cooking in the kitchen. I still feel the breeze coming in from the window. I'm touching the desk. You're totally invested in your senses. And so I really believe that the more of a sensorial experience we can produce through marketing and advertising, the more immersive customer experience we will get, the more sincere definition of our brand or our product will come through.
I love that. That's really interesting around, yes, we almost overemphasize the visual. The visuals, I'd say it's the easy part because it's well understood.
Yes.
But all the other senses are really powerful drivers of our emotions.
Right.
You know, smell is a really powerful driver of memories.
Yes.
There, but it's a lot harder. Mm-hmm. To think about, visual is easy. Mm-hmm. We have lots of tools. We've evolved. We know it works, doesn't work. But all those other senses are a great way to market and harder, but also probably where there's greater reward. Because if you figure out how to do it, and I love your example, wow, you're taking advantage of more and more of those. You have a podcast. Tell the listeners about your podcast. I was happy. I was a guest earlier, last year. So advertise your podcast. Tell us all about it.
Absolutely. So my podcast is called Sound in Marketing, and just almost 2 years I've been doing it and 74 episodes in soon. And I just basically talk about all the things. I do a lot of research, as Roger knows, and I'm really active on LinkedIn. And so whatever is profound, what's exciting me, I try and bring on somebody that can talk about it. And it's a selfish thing because I learn a lot. And that's why I love it so much. I get an education through interviewing these people, but there's just so many aspects of sound that there is. I just never run out of ideas of who I can bring on because it's musical and it's sound and it's technical and it's sensorial. It's all of it. It's quite a rabbit hole.
It is. It's a rabbit hole, but it's a big rabbit hole because one of the things I'm really impressed by your podcast is the diversity of the guests you get.
Yes.
From really different industries. And yes, there's a common thread around sonic audio branding that makes sense because that's what you're an expert in. But it's, you bring in all these people and maybe I'd never even thought of X person was involved or X industry was there. It's like, oh, that's super interesting. So maybe kudos for the diversity of the guests and the great job you do on your podcast. If you're not listening to the Sound and Marketing podcast, definitely check it out. Gina does a great job, and 74 episodes in, that's a lot. It's interesting though. It's funny. You said it's selfish because I actually do this because I really like it. Cause I love talking to people. And at some point I was like, I have all these conversations with people and I start recording them. Right? But I think that's a little bit of the secret. People ask me about podcasts, talk about something you really like and you're really interested in. Right. And then it'll be easier. And I say easier because sometimes it's hard. There's a lot of work getting guests and doing the research and
editing.
And the recording, this is the easiest part of podcasting of all, right? Like this is the fun, easy part. Have a conversation. It's all the work around it.
Right.
That's hard. What would you, along those lines, I just gave my advice of sparring, but do something you love. But what you've done a lot of podcasting. What advice for any aspiring podcasters would you give?
I second you. Find something that you're really interested in. And even like niche down, like keep niching until it's something that you're really interested in, and then push publish. Don't try and make it perfect, because I will guarantee you, if you go back, I'll tell you this, and this is embarrassing. If you go back to my first, second, third, fourth, fifth, sixth, seventh episode, they're awful. I hate them.
I resemble that comment.
But if you wait until it's perfect, you're never going to just do it. And by doing that, it prompts you to get better and better and go, okay, this didn't work, so now I'm going to try this. And these are things that you won't come to until you've actually put it out there. So just go for it. Find your niche and then just do it. And if it doesn't work, it doesn't work. But at least you know.
Yeah, I so agree. Just do it. And realize you're not going to be very good at first. I feel when you said first, second, I was like, oh, I feel so bad about my early guests. Like, and although they were super fascinating, I was the dullard in things and they did a great job. But yeah, go do it. And you have to enjoy it and like it to keep it going, because it can be a lot of hard work.
It is.
Just go do it. Tell me more, though, about your class. Soundinmarketing.com is where you go sign up. Tell me about your class.
Yeah. So yes, soundinmarketing.com. And I have a course called Sounds, Power, and Influence in Marketing. I'm hoping by the end of the year, I'll have two more. I want to do one about what is sonic branding, which that'll be a big one, and then sensorial marketing. So right now I have the first one. And basically what we do, it's an online course, so you can take it on your own. I encourage people to do like a chapter a week, because I really want people to sit on it and think, because it is a different way of thinking. And the more that you step back, the more you'll get it. But basically, we start with exploring sound. Like I said, the very beginning of sound, beginning of time, whatever that is, there was sound, there was vibration and movement. So this is truly us. And then we go into early radio advertising, going into the age of internet and how that brought on so many opportunities and just changed the landscape. Ridiculous and fast too. It really has not been that long that the internet has been prevalent. And then we go into sound's purchase power and how it causes action and reaction like none other. And then how our brain processes sound.
Awesome. Awesome. So I have a personal confession that I was like, we were scheduling the interview and I was looking at it, I was like, I need to take this class. And I hope to be on here and say, hey, I started this. And then life and work got in the way and things like that. But I'm going to make a commitment. I'm actually going to, right after this interview, I'm going to go sign up.
Because
I really, because I love talking to you and I learn something every time I talk to you. And why wouldn't I want to take your class? Because I think it's so critically important what you're talking about. And I feel like I have a lot to learn in it. So I am looking forward. You'll have one new student.
Thank you. I really enjoy, and it's kind of ironic because this is an online course that I'm not doing person to person.
Sure.
But I love when people like have a moment, if I can inspire a moment for them to think independently about sound, that's so exciting. I remember having a conversation with a company on Zoom and they had never thought about sonic branding before. And I just started talking about some of the things that I talk about. And this one guy, I remember his wheels started turning and it was so cool to watch. And I stopped talking. And he started going, oh, we should do this. And what if we did this and we can do this? And it was so exciting because, yes, I want to succeed in this industry and all that stuff, but I want the industry to succeed.
Yeah.
I think that there's so many, like I said, there's so many elements to it. You do something completely different than I do. And I do something completely different than somebody else, but we all fit together. And if we can bring awareness of sound and voice and the importance of it and talk outward, that's the other thing that I think we're not doing enough of, talking outward to marketers and brand managers. And I think there's just so much more that can be done. And I think that we will help each other out by talking about it and educating.
Well, your enthusiasm is infectious. And I could just hear it. No, in what you're saying. And I think that's so important. And you're so right. Isn't the joy of teaching anyone is so evident when you can see it, it clicks in their brain and they get it. And
so
you're
great.
Like, oh my gosh, it feels so good.
It's so
right?
great.
Great. So yeah, great. Absolutely. Absolutely. Hey, Gina, something that we talked about you interviewed me on your podcast, and I know something you feel really strongly about, and I feel really strongly about too, is diversity and inclusion and the challenges of it. And frankly, the tech industry has massive challenges there. And I'd argue beyond the tech industry, the whole, everywhere, there's massive challenges there. Tell me more about your thoughts of where we are with diversity and inclusion, where we need to go. Mm-hmm. Big, broad, wide question there, but go ahead and start.
I've been inspired about this. I think Noelle Silver really lit a fire under me when I interviewed her, and she was talking about, she was talking about diversity in AI. And the fact of the matter is, if you don't have diversity in your crew, in your infrastructure, the people that are actually developing and making the things, you are not diverse. Because if it was a bunch of white people developing something that's supposed to be a multicultural situation, you are not talking to everyone. Like, I could be somebody that is the most multicultural person, but I can't relate to someone of color. I can't relate to somebody from Australia. Like, I can't relate to something that I haven't experienced. And so it's so important that there's diversity from the bottom up. And of course, there should be diversity at the top as well. But recently, Pandora started an initiative that really got me excited. And it's called, the website is called StandForSonicDiversity.com. And they brought up some very good points. And they said that when clients come to them, I think they said 90% of the time, they didn't have an ask for like a cultural background or a race or a gender or anything. But the default was still white female, I believe. It was at least white, but I think it was white female. And that was still the default. And they thought, well, that doesn't make any sense. So they started an initiative where 50% of the time, they're going to put someone of color in there if there isn't a, if there isn't a specification. You should go on there because they have a audio clip on there that's really, really good. And one of their VO artists said something about, we are starting this racism and there's not even a visual to put in front of it. Why are we starting this racism when it's just voice? And it doesn't make sense. I'm very excited about that. There's a book that I'm starting to read by Jennifer Stowover called The Sonic Color Line that Steve Keller suggested to me. And I think it's just our responsibility to pay attention. If you say that there isn't racism, that's absolutely not true. And it's not even a broken system. It's just, we put this together wrong. And so I feel like we need to really examine every facet of everything. And I don't know how to do that, but I'm going to try. And I'm very excited about Pandora's initiative. I have an event on April 21st I have a monthly Make Sound on Purpose Zoom that I do. And on April 21st, we're actually going to be talking about how can we bring diversity into voice, because I'm not the expert at all, but I'd love to hear from other people. And if we can just start pushing forward, because last summer was terrible, but that's not the first time that we've dealt with this. I think it was more pronounced because we were all at home and very emotional, but nothing's fixed yet. And it's going to take some time. And I think that it is all of our responsibilities to pay attention. Whatever color we are, whatever ethnicity we are, wherever we live, we need to be paying attention.
Yeah, I think it's all about being woke and aware, so to speak, right? And being aware of, we have a long, long way to go. I love what you said. The diversity of the creators reflects the diversity of the audience. If your creators are not diverse, your audience is not going to be diverse. So build diverse creators, right? Developers, designers, sonic branders, everything. And you'll have a diverse audience. And that's how to do it. I love that website. And you sent it to me and I took a look at it. And one of the things that struck me is not only diversity, and they're talking about voice actors too, but also avoiding stereotypes.
Yes.
Right? Like saying, okay, I have an African-American voice actor. The voiceover that you're doing is supposed to sound African-American.
Right, right.
Well, no. Like maybe that's appropriate. And it might be voiceovers that make sense or something that sounds African-American. But why are you stereotyping them into that when they can do any voiceover? I thought that was really powerful.
Yeah.
It's something that is endemic across so many of these industries. Is we stereotype people and put them into buckets A, B, and C instead of they're a person. They can do many different things. What do they do best, right?
Yeah.
It's something we need to keep on working on, but there's a long, long way to go. I'm definitely going to put, by the way, listeners, all the links, everything you just talked about in the show notes. So you can go check this out. But maybe tell a few more things about that website or other things that you thought really resonated with you around solving the challenges we have around diversity and inclusion.
One thing as a white female that I have realized is that I definitely have a privilege over others, but it doesn't mean that my vocalization is what should be prevalent. I may have a platform, like I have the podcast, but I have a platform just as what my status is. And if there's a way to elevate someone to tell their story through what I can do, that's where I'm looking. I can't tell the story of someone that's not me. And so I think that it's important for us to hear from that demographic or from that person, the stories. We need to be listening, and they're hard stories, and we need to just grin and bear it and say, I'm sorry, and not be like, oh, I know how you feel, because we don't. And I think that there's something lost in that with just sitting with someone and hearing hurt and just being there to hug them, to say, I'm sorry, I even say, I have no idea what you're feeling right now, but I hurt for you. I feel like that's what I could say right now, but I don't want to do a comparison story. I want people to understand that what's going on, what happened this summer, is not an isolated event. And it's not just this happened in the 60s and the 70s and then the 80s and the 90s and the 2000s were peachy. It wasn't like that. And it's not going to be peachy going forward, but I'm going to do my darndest to not contribute to what has gone on for as long as we've been a country.
One thing that's really struck me about some of the messaging that came out from what happened this summer, I consider myself a liberal and fairly progressive. And I was like, oh, I should be colorblind. And it was like, no. That's really the wrong way to think about it, because that's glossing over all the challenges that we have. I don't understand someone. I'm a white male, someone with a different background. So let them express their hopes, their aspirations, their challenges there that are going to be different than mine, and give them a voice.
Yeah.
And understand and both celebrate differences, but recognize that differences also mean people are challenged in different ways. And I think that was an awakening moment for me to think about
it. Oh, it absolutely.
In a totally different way. Mm-hmm. And I also think, and you were getting to this a little bit, it's a little bit about, if you have a platform, then help amplify those voices of people who don't have a platform, or because of circumstances that are because of societal wide kind of biases, it's harder for them to gain a platform. So let's amplify people who have amazing, amazing things to share and contribute, but have more challenges to share and contribute those things. So,
exactly.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
I want to change topics a little bit and talk about, I work for Samsung. And one of the things we're doing with Samsung is really voice-enabling devices that aren't voice devices per se. So putting voice in a TV or voice in an appliance or making your washer and dryer voice-enabled there. So a little bit different from, there's a group of people who will go and buy a smart speaker because they want voice. Our view has been, that's great. But there's also people who go, they'll buy a TV because they want a TV. And they're like, oh, wait a second. I can actually talk to this.
Yeah.
That's cool. I never thought, I didn't buy it because I could talk to it.
Right.
Now I can. And now they become more interested in voice and interacting with that way with their devices. What's your thoughts around that?
Yeah. I remember you were talking about this on my podcast and it got me super excited because I hadn't thought about this, but to your point, I'm paraphrasing, but basically what you were saying was that there's like a whole demographic of people that will not buy a smart speaker because it's so different from what they like. I don't want to say necessarily that it's an older generation, but I could see this in some members of my family, which is, what do I do with this? I don't need another paperclip or whatever it is, or what's it called?
Clippy.
I don't need, this doesn't help me. But if you're building context and perspective by associating something that they do understand. They understand refrigerators. They understand microwaves. So mm-hmm. you're bringing the attention of voice to a demographic that wouldn't receive it through a smart speaker. Mm-hmm. But if you put it into context and go, oh, my refrigerator can talk. Oh, I could figure out, I don't even know all of the features. I don't have the fancy appliances, but if there was a way to tell your microwave, set it for 30 seconds, maybe your hands are sticky or something. And you go, hey, that's kind of cool. I don't have to clean off the number pad this time. Or I love that. And I think that's a big element of voice. If we're just creating it because it's like a fun thing, ooh, we find this really cool because we're techie and we're nerdy and all of that stuff. Mm-hmm. Are we actually marketing to anyone, or are we just patting ourselves on the back and going, oh, this is fun, but nobody's really getting it? It feels like the one person on the playground that never figured out the game, and they're mm-hmm. like, oh yeah, this is fun. And they're like sort of participating, but they don't quite get it. Yeah. Anyways, but I think context and perspective is key, and utilizing an object that people are familiar with and incorporating this new idea into that rather than starting a whole new idea, that's very powerful. It's very relatable.
We were talking earlier about COVID, and we were talking about how we touch things, and now we're mm-hmm. cognizant. So now I want a different way of interacting with the elevator, right? Now, whether it's voice or there's some kind of touch where I don't actually touch things, and waves, and there's all kinds of experiments. I think one of the things is to go and say, hey, when I think about appliances, are one of my favorites. And there's 80 buttons. And you go and look at the manual and it's like, okay, simple stuff, hopefully is one button. Uh-huh. But anything remotely complicated is you got to press 8 buttons. And I always feel like once I press 3 or 4 buttons, why doesn't this thing have a voice interface? If I could describe it fast, as soon as I have to look at the manual, I definitely want a voice interface. Mm-hmm. But as soon as I have to press a bunch of buttons, because we're as humans, we didn't learn to press buttons. We learned to talk.
That's right. Oh, that's absolutely right.
If we can make this easier, I would argue every device that has a bunch of buttons is ripe for thinking about, could I put a voice interface on top of it and make it easier? And that's pragmatic. It's not sexy, but it makes it easier to use. And if you can make devices easier to use, it'll be simpler, easier. People like them more. So I think it's easy, as you said, to be building these complicated, sexy, amazing things where pragmatic basics actually could be really practical and useful, and maybe where a lot of people are going to start and where people are.
Yeah, it's like making a really sexy Ferrari. Mm-hmm. And then I look at it and I go, I can't afford that. And that doesn't fit my kids' car seats in it.
Right, like, right.
What is the point of that? Okay, I'm just going to go over here and get into my Ford.
Yeah, I need my Ford or GM, right? We need the Ford or GM a voice. That's right. What people are actually using it for. And there's a lot of people building the Ferraris and Lamborghinis a voice. And that's fine. Nothing wrong with building that.
No, no.
But you need the mass market.
You
things,
do.
Right? You need your Ford or your Toyota, right? A voice. I love that. That's a great analogy. I'm going to have to steal that.
It's yours.
Well, you can use it too. Hey, Gina, one question I love to ask guests, I call my hidden gem question. It could be a voice experience, an audio, a podcast, something that you really enjoy that is kind of hidden, that you don't think a lot of people enjoy and you'd like to share with our listeners, something that they should go check out.
Sure. I'll do two because there's a movie that I remember watching. It was way before I was even thinking about sonic branding. I was just writing music, but it was so beautiful. And it just says what I talk about now. But the movie August Rush, did you ever see that one?
I haven't. Okay. Now you got me intrigued.
You have to go see it. It has, oh gosh, I can't remember. It's the little kid from Finding Neverland is in it. But anyways, Robin Williams is in it too. And it's this little boy and he's an orphan and he escapes to New York City. I can't remember why. Oh, he's looking for his parents. He finds out he has parents and he's looking for his parents. So he goes into New York City and he gets there and it's loud and he hears dump trucks and construction and cars honking and the air pushing up from the vents in the walkways and everything. And he's just like looking around and it's just so noisy. And then he steps up onto a box and he looks around and he starts conducting.
Oh, cool.
And it was so cool because I was like, he changed this moment into something like, that's so obnoxious to, wow, he's hearing something different. Mm-hmm. And it was that whole like changing perspective thing. So I highly recommend checking that out. I think it was like from the early 2000s or something.
Remind me the name of the movie again.
August Rush. And Robin Williams is in
Rush.
It.
Well, anything Robin Williams, I'll go watch. So
it's so special. And he's very musically inclined is basically what it comes down to. But the other, I'll think of a podcast that I really enjoy is called 20,000 Hertz. And it has Dallas Taylor from De Facto Sound. And great quality. Gosh, he has a team working on it. So that's why it sounds so good. But he likes to talk about the more musical end of sound. Mm-hmm. And I just really, really appreciate how he puts it forward. And he told the story of, I like all of the episodes, but he started talking about the lack of sound and the silence in sound. And I can't remember which episode it was, but he referenced John Cage's 3 minutes and 22 seconds. I think that's what it's called. It was a very famous composition that John Cage put together. And basically the idea was, and if you hear the original recording, it's hilarious, but he gets up and you've got the applause of everybody. He stands up on stage and then he sits down at the piano and he puts his hands on the keys and nothing. And all you hear is like uncomfortable shifting in chairs, coughing.
Oh, cool.
And then when the first movement is done, he closes the lid and he looks at the audience and then he goes and he does the second movement and he doesn't perform anything. And the idea is the music is the ambiance around. So it's just very interesting. And I like his perspective, how he thinks outside of the box as well. So 20,000 Hertz. And I believe they just got picked up by either Wondery or TEDx, or they're part of a big podcast channel now.
Oh, that sounds very cool. 20,000 Hertz. I'm going to have to definitely check that out.
Yeah.
Darn you. Now my podcast list got even longer.
Sorry. And he does long ones too.
That's all good. My cup is overflow with great podcasts these days. So yeah, the more you listen to, the more you want to listen to. Hey, Gina, what is your 2021 prediction?
So, ooh, this
year. What's going to happen in 2021? I don't know, sonic branding, voice, anything you've been talking about. What's your prediction that you think will happen this year?
Well, I'll do my predictions and what I want to see. But
sure,
I think,
or it could be what your hopes. Hopes
yeah,
are
my
just
hopes.
Good as prediction.
Sure. I think that there's going to be a lot of sound in healthcare.
Okay.
There's going to be a lot of work in healthcare because just what we were talking about, how we need to provide less touching experiences when we're very germophobic, as we will be for many years, probably.
Right.
So I think there's going to be a lot. There's a thing called alarm fatigue that hospitals deal with a lot. And the problem is there's buzzers and beeps going on everywhere. And there's it basically what happens is you start hearing nothing. And so the nurses and the doctors they can't necessarily respond to all of them because they're not sure which one is which. And the decibel level for some of the sounds in the hospitals, I think they said at one point there was one hospital that was measured. It was, I don't know, it was something like 3 times as loud as a chainsaw just because of the ambiance sounds that were around. So it's not right now a very nice place to feel better. And so they're trying to find more ways to maybe do a check-in on their patients just by maybe a smart speaker and seeing how they're doing, finding out how, So there's a lot of work to be done in healthcare. So I definitely see that happening, especially as we move out of the COVID craze.
I get super excited about all the innovation we're seeing in healthcare. And that's super, I'd never thought that. You got my mind spinning, which is great, around not only, it's interesting, not only, so one, that's got to be an uncomfortable environment for the patients.
Yeah.
In a place where you're supposed to be healing.
Right.
You got this uncomfortable auditory environment.
Yeah.
And then two, right, absolutely. If it's all noisy and beeps and boom and things like that, one, the doctors and nurses are probably tuning it out. And two, they're not probably differentiating over this means I should do this or that, or this is critical or that. What an amazing opportunity. That's a great, I love that. I'm super excited about innovation. I don't know much about healthcare, but what I do love about it is it seems like an industry ripe for disruption and all the innovation happening in it. And I love listening to doctors talk about what the future is going to be.
Well, and the other thing too is, and this is kind of sad but good at the same time, is hospitals and major healthcare situations, they have a lot of investors and they have a lot of backers and people that they have to please. Right. And so when you think of it as more hospitality, like bed and breakfasty or something like that, they're way more inclined to push a lot of money into it because they want to have the best hospital. They want to, maybe they want to keep people there longer. I'm not sure, but there's money behind these hospitals. And so I think that they would be more inclined, because it has been proven that sound heals at a cellular level. I can only imagine that they're willing to put the money in and find the right people to implement and make it happen.
Cool. Very cool. All right. So now I want you to rub your crystal ball. 5 or 10 years out. What's a prediction you have for 5 or 10 years out? And I'll preface this by saying, we're going to have to talk in 5 and 10 years.
Yeah.
See if I'm right. See if you got it right. But anyway.
I don't think that it's going to be something like audio or voice first is going to take over cell phones. There's too much functionality for cell phones. But I think that it's going to be an enhancement where people have the option of holding up their phone and using voice, and not just for cell phones, but for just everyday functionality. There will be an option of voice wherever they go, which is also very helpful for people that can't see. If they have the option of more voice first technology rather than, I don't know if you've ever seen a blind person use an iPhone before, but it's nuts. Like, they shouldn't have to go through that. Functionality for people that are impaired in one way or another just makes sense to me. Something that I am excited to see, but I have no idea how it's going to happen, is e-commerce on smart speakers and smart technology. I have no idea how they're going to do this, but I feel there's a huge opportunity through sound that they can utilize to stand out. I'm imagining, say, there's a company that's just now launching and their first initiatives are on smart speaker. How do they stand out if they don't have the visual? I know we have the shows and all of that stuff, but how do they stand out when there's no visual? And I think somebody's going to come up with something brilliant, and then there'll be some copycats, and then they'll extract some things that work, and then there'll be this whole new functionality. Because one of the things that I think about is when you Google search, you've got a whole page, and then you've got 20 pages or 500 mm-hmm. pages after that. But when you voice search and you say, hey, Alexa, find me a chicken recipe or something like that, how does it choose that? How can we manipulate that and get to the top?
Right. And how do you do it? It strikes me as not only get to the top, but you're talking about really sensorial marketing that we've been so visually focused.
Yeah.
Somebody's going to figure out amazing ways to market with all our other senses.
Right.
And those who do, there's a lot of innovation that's going to come, and that's going to be exciting and cool to see. All right. I'll have to 5 or 10 years down the line.
But that we'll is, see. You're right. You're right. The more, everyone's calling for a more immersive customer experience. And I believe that the way to do that is to tap into a sensorial perspective, because that is the immersive experience that everyone wants. It's the most sincere. It's the most emotional. It's going to stick in your brain and bring you back to that moment better than anything else. And I think the only way the brands are going to be able to do that is if they step back and really see their brand as a persona. Right. And I don't know how many actually do that. They say, this is the message we want to convey, but is that what that brand or that product is?
Yeah, it's interesting because brands, they think of their customers as personas.
Yes.
But they don't think of themselves as personas. Mm-hmm. Or I don't think most brands do. And obviously they are a persona. And there's definitely an opportunity there. Listen, Gina, if people want to keep in touch with you, Dreamer Productions, your sound and marketing courses, your podcast, you have a lot.
I do.
And I'll put these all in the show notes, but what's the ways to keep in touch with what you're doing?
If you want to reach out to me, I'm very, very heavily invested in LinkedIn. So I do a lot of stuff on LinkedIn. I'm learning the Twitter, and you can also find me at Dreamer Productions, D-R-E-A-M-R productions.com. And my courses and a lot of the events that I host and information that I share, you can also find on soundinmarketing.com. That's where my course also is. And like I said, I've got the one course right now, but I'm hoping to have two more courses by the end of the year.
Awesome. Awesome.
Podcast, Sound and Marketing Podcast. And you can find that on all the podcast hosting places.
Awesome. I will put those all in the show notes. Well, listen, you were talking about teaching someone and getting their brain spinning and clicking. Just talking to you got me really excited to go check out a bunch of things. So I really was excited to have you as a guest because I knew you'd get me excited about all these super opportunities and really interesting thoughts you have around audio and where it can go and sensorial marketing and kind of future looking where we could go. And so I have loved this conversation. I'm all excited and energized and jazzed to go look up a bunch of information, and I'm going to sign up for your course. Awesome. So I am excited. So thank you. Thank you so much. You've been an amazing guest.
Thank you, Roger. And I really appreciate all the things that you're doing with Samsung and that you recognize the importance of diversity as well. So keep on, keep on.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Well, that's all, folks. Till next time, this is Roger Kibbe of the Bixby Developers Chat Podcast signing off.